I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, we'll talk about the Seattle Times endorsing Bob Ferguson in the race for governor. Plus, we'll detail 15 critical questions the media should be asking Ferguson before ballots are mailed out. Plus, Manka Dhingra doubling down on her lie. And the very last thing the Democrats should want is for Joe Biden to be talking more. That and more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month by signing up at undividedpod.com. Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here on this Monday. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm struggling with how to start the show today. I want to make a couple things clear. I hope that, you know, I know from time to time people probably tune into the show that don't agree with me on an awful lot, and I love that, and I think that's fine. Disagreement is good. And for those people who might be watching occasionally, you know, I want to make something clear before I dive into this segment. I don't hate Bob Ferguson. I'm sure he's a wonderful person. I mean, I've met him several times. I've had an opportunity in my previous career as a journalist to interview him several times. He was perfectly pleasant. I'm sure he's a wonderful husband and a great father, and I wish no ill will upon him. And I think sometimes in politics these days, it can be hard to, you know, the line between disliking someone as a person and disliking someone as a politician or as a political candidate gets blurred a little bit. I think there's a lot of hate and anger in politics, and I never want to come across like I hate the man. I don't hate the man. But he scares the hell out of me when it comes to the prospect of him being the next governor of Washington State. I hope it also comes across to people, even if you don't agree with me, that I love this state. I genuinely want this state to succeed. I am personally saddened, I think, terrified by the prospect of what's been happening to our state continuing. You know, you watch for so many years the crime crisis spiral out of control. You watch the drug crisis. I was looking at some video of Jonathan Cho out on Aurora Avenue in Seattle. And you watch, you know, people who are dying in filth and squalor on park benches with needles in their arm, their skin gray. And you see those pictures over and over. And you just look at that and you think, well, this cannot be the state of Washington. This cannot be this wonderful state with all this potential, just allowing this to happen in one of the most beautiful cities, you know, in Seattle in the world. At least it was when I moved here 15 years ago. So I love this state. I think the state has so much potential. I've seen that potential before, and I've seen it living up more so to its potential as a city and as a state. And so, you know, my criticisms come from a place of love, fear, concern, and anger sometimes at where we've allowed the state to go. And so I just want to set it there. And I think yesterday I found myself just deeply upset. Not so much angry, but kind of sad. The Seattle Times, the newspaper of record, the largest newspaper in the state of Washington, just endorsed someone for governor who is on record saying that he supports the decriminalization of hard drugs during a time when more people are dying of drugs in the state than ever before, during a time when the drug crisis is not only killing people on our streets, but it's leading to significant quality of life issues around crime and homelessness, you know, at a time when the fentanyl crisis in particular has truly shown itself to be responsible for so much of what is wrong in the state of Washington. And we have the newspaper of record who has decided that the best person to lead the state into the future is someone who is on record saying he would like to decriminalize hard drugs. I have a hard time making sense of that. That makes me sad. That makes me sad. So the Seattle Times came out in its endorsement of Bob Ferguson. And I'll read just the first couple paragraphs of their endorsement because it's fascinating to me. As you read, if I were to not know who they endorsed and I read the first couple paragraphs, I'd be like, oh, they're not going to endorse Bob Ferguson. There's no way. It says an education system failing to produce expected outcomes, transportation projects wildly over budget, concerns about community safety metastasizing into outright fear. The next governor of Washington will face all these challenges and many more in an atmosphere of increased political polarization and coarsening civic discourse. So I read that and I think, okay, the Seattle Times editorial board gets it. They know that we can't continue down this destructive path that we've been on. And then in the same breath, they endorse the man who is the most status quo candidate of any of the 28 candidates in the race for governor. They said of the 28 gubernatorial candidates on the primary ballot, Democrat Bob Ferguson is best positioned to lead Washington through the next 4 years. His experience as state attorney general, his detailed policy positions, and his willingness to tackle tough issues give him the edge in a crowded field. That is mind-boggling to me. And actually, it was really surprising to me. And let me also preface this by saying I don't think the Seattle Times, who they endorse, is the end-all be-all. Now, in an election year where the sitting governor is not running again, we know that those races are particularly close. So the Seattle Times has a readership that I would say is center-left. And so they have an important readership in that regard when it comes to movable Democrats, the movable middle, and independents. And I really believe that this race comes down to 150,000 or so independent-minded voters who are going to decide who is going to be the next governor. And you have the Seattle Times editorial board telling them that despite all the things they outlined that are wrong in the state of Washington, the guy best suited to improve things is the guy most closely aligned politically with the governor who's run the state for the last 12 years. That boggles the mind. It doesn't make any sense. There's no explanation. I could have the entire Seattle Times editorial board in here sitting with me explaining their decision, and they would not be able to make sense of it because their own article, you know, is interesting. They go on to say, you know, it was like an endorsement with a bunch of caveats. To which I think, well, why even endorse in the race at all? They said the editorial board makes this decision with caveats. The good Bob Ferguson is smart, hardworking, and fearless. The other Bob Ferguson can occasionally appear petty, pushy, and overly ambitious. It seems Ferguson has spent his entire political career in service of a run for the governor's mansion. That kind of ambition is good and bad. Over the years, it has produced both policy wins and eye-rolling skepticism. And then they, you know, detail all these areas where he's failed. You know, failed on transparency. This is an attorney general who, this is an area where the Seattle Times and I have been not only in lockstep on, but have worked together to try to improve. And that has been the absolute failure of the party in power to be transparent to the people they serve. Bob Ferguson is no exception. They knock him in this editorial, yet they then endorse him. You know, the same on public safety. They knock him in this editorial, but then they endorse him, and so on and so on and so on. So in all these areas, they're saying failure, 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 failure. They're like, but we'll endorse him anyway. But we'll endorse him anyway. But we'll endorse him anyway. And that is the exact mindset that got us into this situation to begin with. That is how we're here. Voters, editorial boards, people with platforms railing on issues the state is facing, and then in the same breath or in the same action, keeping the exact same people in power. Do we not see that that doesn't make any sense? That by saying we're going to move forward with the exact same people who got us into this mess, you're saying you don't care if people continue to die in record numbers on our streets. You're saying you don't care that the homeless crisis is worse than it's ever been before. You're saying, without saying it, that you don't care that the mental health crisis is worse than it's ever been before. You don't care that Washington State is less affordable than it's ever been before. You don't care that Washingtonians are more taxed than they've ever been before. Because you can't have it both ways. You can't endorse the candidate that is most similar to the status quo and also say you're not happy with the way things are. Those two things can't exist at once. So Bob Ferguson uses this and he goes out and it's funny. He uses this phrase status quo over and over. He said, honored to receive the endorsement of the Seattle Times today. As governor, I will bring Washingtonians together to take on our biggest challenges. We will not accept the status quo. You are the status quo. How are you not the status quo? You've been the attorney general for 12 years. You're an independently elected official, yet you have not spoken out or pushed back against your party on any of the decisions that have led to this point in our state's history. You are the status quo. You're endorsed by the status quo. So it's just this funny use of this word. So what was my expectation? There were some people on Twitter when I was like having a meltdown about this yesterday saying, well, what did you expect from the Seattle Times editorial board, Brandy? I guess reason and logic and common sense is too much. I thought they'd endorse Mark Mullett. Truly. That was my, and I, in fact, I think I told Mark Mullett that. I was like, you'll probably get the Seattle Times endorsement, right? Because the Seattle Times editorial board, I know this is shocking, but they're moderates. They're Seattle moderates. And, you know, there's a big difference in who's, you know, what a moderate truly is. They're Seattle moderates. If you look back at some of the positions the Seattle Times editorial board has taken on public safety and taxation and initiatives and things like that, fairly moderate, right? And so who is more moderate than Mark Mullett? Is there anyone? He's in what I call the roadkill caucus, because nothing, the only thing in the middle of the road is roadkill. And he's like one of the last remaining true moderates in Olympia. And so I thought, well, they'll send a message and just say, hey, we're not going to continue down the same path the state's been on because it's been a disaster, but we can't endorse a Republican because our readership will lose its collective minds. So let's endorse Mark Mullett. So I really thought that. So when I didn't see it was Mark Mullett, I was pretty surprised, actually. They did put a little paragraph in here gushing about Mark Mullett, but then not endorsing him. They said, Democratic State Senator Mark Mullett is an impressive public servant with strong support on the editorial board. His brand of centrist politics is rare and badly needed in Olympia. For whatever reason, his candidacy has not caught fire. Wow, could it be that newspapers like yours are endorsing Bob Ferguson? And he has spent energy dinging Ferguson instead of fleshing out and promoting policy positions. I disagree with that. I think he's had a good balance of both. They said this may not be his race, but Mullett should look to other opportunities to serve the public. The Senate is losing an important leader. And I agree with them on all of that, but they really don't have anything negative to say other than he's been dinging Ferguson. Yeah, it's a political campaign. He's been out there helping people understand the difference between him and Bob Ferguson, why they are two different types of Democrats. That's a very important thing to do. And there's a lot of things to ding Bob Ferguson about. The media is clearly not doing it. So I guess his opponents have to do it. And I think he's done it without being nasty. Nicole, have you seen a single like nasty attack anything from Mark Mullett about Bob Ferguson?
No,
I have
not at all.
I have not. I mean, for the very most, reasonable. He's just kind of a nice guy.
He just called him out on lying and asking people to break the law.
Right. Like, oh, wow, God forbid. So anyway, it's just unhinged. Now let's get to the why not Reichert. I've endorsed Dave Reichert. And so I didn't expect the Seattle Times to endorse him. That's a little leap too far, even for the old Ed board. But their rationale is, again, I go back to heartbreaking. So they had a bunch of things they put in there, but they said Republican Dave Reichert, a former congressman who touts his tenure as King County Sheriff from 1997 to 2005, offered conflicting views on a wide range of issues, saying one thing to the editorial board and another to his supporters. Reichert wouldn't tell the board who he supports for president, but then pantomimed nodding when telling a Republican group what he does when asked whether he supports Trump, according to an account of the meeting provided by Ferguson's camp. So they're referring to Dave Reichert, allegedly a Bob Ferguson spy in the room at a Republican event, said Dave Reichert nodded his head when he was asked whether he'd vote for Trump, but then he won't tell the Ed board whether he'll vote for Trump. So you are telling me, Seattle Times editorial board, speaking directly to you, all the issues in the state of Washington, all the issues in Seattle, and it matters more to you that Dave Reichert tell you whether he's going to vote for Donald Trump than it does to solve the homeless crisis, to reduce crime, to stop people dying in filth and squalor and addiction on our streets, to lower costs for families, to get more police officers on the beat. All of that takes a back seat to whether Dave Reichert is willing to say that he's going to vote for Donald Trump. You have to be kidding me. That is when you get to the point where you lose all credibility and seriousness. And I'll say something as a knock a little bit on Dave Reichert. He should just come out and say it at this point. He should just come out and say it. You know, and I've gone back and forth on this. Dave Reichert's in a difficult position. He's in a difficult position. He is in this weird primary battle with Semi Byrd, where people are saying he's not conservative enough and he needs the base to be able to win as a Republican. You certainly can't lose any Republicans, and you need an awful lot of Democrats and independents. And so I think he's trying to sort of keep them, you know, in the fold. And then he's trying to stick to sort of this independent nature that he has. And so he's like, well, gosh, if I come out, and I don't know if he will vote for Trump. I do not know whether he's hedging because he's not sure, or he is hedging because he knows it's not popular to vote for Trump, or whatever it is. But at this point, not saying it is just saying it in the eyes of the media. And they're going to continue to harp on that issue and ignore all these other things. So Dave Reichert, I think he can win by being himself. I think he can win by being blunt and honest and then having the retort to the media saying, you can continue to ask about Donald Trump as many times as you want to. I'm going to continue to bring the issue back to crime, affordability, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. It's embarrassing, frankly, that this is like one of the fundamental things the media has focused on when it comes to Dave Reichert, someone with this long track record in law enforcement, someone who served as a Republican in a blue district in Congress for several terms. And they just are obsessed, like crawling out of their skin to know what freaking box he's going to circle on the November ballot in the race for president, when we don't even know if we don't even know who the Democrats are going to have. Like at this point, I mean, there are Democrats in Congress saying Joe Biden shouldn't even be the nominee. So you want Dave Reichert to commit to who he's going to vote for now so you can be like, orange man bad, lose my mind, when Democrats don't even know who's going to be on the ballot in November. Get a grip. Get a hold of yourselves. And that comes from someone who's never voted for Donald Trump and who has said some pretty nasty things about Donald Trump in the past. Hell, I'll probably vote for the guy. Let's just say it right here. Nicole, let's just do it. Now is the time, because okay, I just have run out of F's to give. I will be voting for Donald Trump in November if it's Donald Trump and Joe Biden. If those are the two people on the ballot and they are both able to serve as president, because Lord knows there's a lot going on. There's a sentencing for Donald Trump. Joe Biden's in his last leg. If it's those two on the ballot in November, Brandi Cruz will be voting for the very first time for Donald J. Trump. There. There you have it. So can now what happens next? Does a lightning bolt come down and strike me dead?
Well, it's funny.
Do
because
I lose my moderate bona fides?
I think you're doing it for the opposite reason as the Times is endorsing Ferguson, because I think they're doing it solely for the purpose of not wanting to lose, because they think he's going to win. And like everybody else that we've talked to that have set has endorsed Ferguson,
is like,
well, he's going to be the guy. He's going to be the guy. So I don't want to be on the losing team.
Yeah.
Well, and that's why they do it. And you're like, no, I'm picking issues. Like, this is the country now.
Right.
I don't care about the person. This is the country. This is what the country needs. Done.
Well, and it's also, you know, what are the options? You got to pick from the options, right? Mm-hmm. But on the Bob Ferguson, and, you know, could it also be that Bob Ferguson has supported tax breaks for legacy media like the Seattle Times? Could that be like the Blevins are like, well, we better support that guy because he supports giving us tax breaks? Wow. Could that be it too? I didn't want to go there. I think your rationale maybe is less sinister.
Oh, no, I do think there's an element of fear.
God,
because he is
so
very,
stupid.
I mean, it is well known he is vindictive. And so
they're
scared of him. So that's somebody that is going likely, they believe, going to be in a power of, or a position of power. So they're protecting themselves by saying, well, we better, like, we're going to be stuck with him. We might as well, you know, give him this.
What they should have done is endorse no one. They should have endorsed no one, because then you're not necessarily on his bad side per se. But again, I go back to, you look at the crisis that we are facing in the state of Washington, and your answer to that crisis is to keep going down that trajectory. That makes you complicit. That makes you culpable for the people dying on our streets. That makes you complicit for the people who are being shot to death and murdered in record numbers. That makes you complicit when a working class mom or dad gets to the gas pump and can only afford to put a gallon in, or is at the grocery store and has to put something back on the shelf. That makes you complicit as the largest newspaper in the state of Washington, with the largest reach of any newspaper in the state of Washington. You have an obligation, and you are failing at that obligation, and you are now complicit. And yes, can we leave the freaking Trump thing in the past? Oh, democracy. Yeah, if you cared about democracy and you really believe democracy is in peril, then you wouldn't be supporting a gubernatorial candidate who asked the Secretary of State, repeatedly directed the Secretary of State, to break election law. Would you? Would you? If we really are going to be morally consistent and say we don't appreciate threats to our democracy, then you'd be speaking out about attacks on signature gatherers. You'd be speaking out about coordinated Democratic efforts to disrupt the lawful gathering of signatures that's protected under our state constitution. So cut the bullshit about Donald Trump. January 6th was a national embarrassment. It was horrifying. He could have done far more to stop his crazy crowd from going into the Capitol. I have no sympathy for the J6ers. Not an ounce. But at the same time, in the same breath, We got freaking riots up and down the West Coast and across the country in 2020 for months on end. We've got police cars lit on fire. We have a whole freaking police precinct that's taken over. And you didn't say jack shit. But you want to 3 years later mark the solemn anniversary of January 6th? You have no moral consistency, no moral clarity. And because of that, a long time ago, if you'd asked me, told me a year ago, I'd be saying I'm going to vote for Donald Trump in November. I would have been like, you have lost your freaking mind. But I really, all of the moral inconsistency has led me to the point where I don't care about it anymore. Because you're both of them are morally bankrupt. I said this on the show last week, Democrats and Republicans, when it comes to the party structure, morally bankrupt to the core, do not give an F about the United States of America, don't care about we the people, no matter how many times you use the phrase, the party system is corrupt to the core. Corrupt to the core. And until we break free of it, we're not going to have any quality candidates. We're just not. So that's what we've got. We've got Donald Trump, who might even be in prison, no idea. And we've got Joe Biden, who might not even be alive. And those are the freaking people that you expect us to pick from. And then you want to look down on me because I'm saying I'm going to vote for Donald Trump? Well, screw you. I just can't even handle it anymore. That's it. That's all I have to say about that.
That was fun.
It's ridiculous. It's genuinely embarrassing. It's embarrassing at this point. So come after me for voting for Donald Trump. Maybe try to find a candidate who has a high likelihood of living till November. And when you do that, then you can come at me for voting for Donald Trump. With that, let's get to 15 questions that I think the media... Should we take a commercial break? No, that's all right. So yesterday I put out 15 questions. So you guys already know that the Bob Ferguson campaign has told us it won't respond to our request for comment anymore. Fine. You know, I think that's fair. I've endorsed Dave Reichert. I think it's a little petty as someone who wants to be a governor of the state of Washington for you to pick and choose what media outlets you're going to respond to simple questions from, but I digress. So there are really some key questions that Bob Ferguson has not been made to answer specific to his record. And so I put a list of 15 together. We did send it, Nicole, correct? You sent it to the Ferguson campaign because we already told them when they told us we're not going to answer your questions anymore, Brandy. We already said, okay, we're going to send them anyway. If you'd like to answer, great. If not, so be it. So I put out on Patreon Locals, it's open though, there's no paywall, 15 questions Bob Ferguson should answer before Election Day. And my call was really to the media to say, hey, here are 15 good questions that I think that Bob Ferguson should be asked to answer. They're fair. They're not bias, I don't think. They're not inherently political in nature. They just speak to his record of things he's done or hasn't done. And so I hope that there is some media outlet out there that will take me up on this and will pose these questions to Bob Ferguson before ballots start to go out. So you can go read the full 15 questions. I'm not going to go through all of them. I do want to go through a few to the points that I made previously. Number 9 on drug abuse. This to me is one of the fundamental issues. I think that it is a disqualifying thing as a gubernatorial candidate to say you want to legalize hard drugs given the extent of our drug epidemic. I think that's disqualifying. Yet in an April 2021 interview on KUOW, Bob Ferguson urged state lawmakers to, quote, eliminate criminal penalties associated with possessing a non-commercial amount of drugs. So I asked in question 9, given the extent of our state's drug overdose crisis and the failure of a similar experiment in Oregon, do you still believe the legislature should move to decriminalize deadly drugs like fentanyl? Yes or no? That's a very simple question. Also on the crime front, again, I think there are things he needs to answer to when it comes to his record. Question 4, crime and disorder. In the summer of 2020, you did not speak out publicly during or after riots and looting in downtown Seattle, where police cars were lit on fire and how high-powered police rifles were stolen. You also did not speak out during the month-long occupied protest zone on Seattle's Capitol Hill, where several people died and an entire police precinct was rendered inoperable. As the state's chief law enforcer, please explain why you chose to stay silent during such a profound period of lawlessness. Fair question? I think so. Also on police pursuit on this topic. Earlier this year, you told King 5 News you did not support a bill passed by Democrats in 2021 that dramatically limited police pursuits. There is no record of you voicing that opposition in 2021, 2022, or 2023. Given that you weighed in publicly on other legislation during those 3 years, why did you not take a public position on police pursuits until the law was fixed via initiative in 2024? That's fair as well. Someone should definitely press him on that. I also threw in a gun control question because we know gun control has been a primary push for Bob Ferguson. He's behind some of the biggest gun control bills that have passed in Olympia. I think that the media should ask him something like this. Despite gun control laws spearheaded by you and your office, gun-related crimes have spiked in Washington state in recent years, including the number of shots fired, shootings on highways, and homicides committed with guns. With more gun control in Washington state than ever before, why do you believe it isn't having the desired effect on crime? That is a fair question. It deserves an answer from the front runner to be the next governor of Washington state. There's also a couple questions in here on lowering costs. You remember we talked about it last week. Bob Ferguson came out with his first ad of the campaign, and one of his priorities in it was to lower costs for families. And I thought, that's interesting. So a couple questions on that. Can you name one tax or tax increase passed during the three terms of Inslee's administration that you did not support? Just one. Just one, Bob Ferguson. One tax or tax increase that you did not or do not support. And also a specific question on capital gains. This has the potential to impact every single Washingtonian who owns a home. Currently, Washington's capital gains tax excludes profits from the sale of someone's primary home. Would you veto any bill that seeks to include profits from the sale of a primary home as capital gains? Because I've told you, if capital gains survives the initiative in November, Democrats will move very quickly to lower the threshold for who has to pay the capital gains tax. Remember, they've said it's the richest of the rich. It's the richest of the rich. That is an absolute money grab for them. And they will lower it and lower it and lower it until when your grandma goes to sell her home, the home that she bought in the 1980s that she's built up all this equity in that she's going to use to retire, they're going to tax her capital gains on that to the tune of 7.5%. That's where this is going. That's where this is going. So if he doesn't support that, I think it's very fair to ask him right now, would you commit to vetoing any effort to make someone's primary home, the sale of that home, subject to the capital gains tax? And finally, let me hit one more because I think this is the all-encompassing thing on this status quo comment he keeps saying. Keeps saying, I've never been satisfied with the status quo. Question 15, in what way would a Bob Ferguson administration be fundamentally different than the Jay Inslee administration? If you can give me one way, hell, give me three if you think that you're not the status quo. But I'll settle for just one way that you believe your administration, Bob Ferguson, would be fundamentally different than the Inslee administration. And I have to believe that the answer is not going to be very satisfying. All right, coming up next, we're going to talk about this horrible case over the weekend. A 13-year-old girl shot to death at Alderwood Mall. It highlights the juvenile crime crisis that we have on our hands right now in the state of Washington. And the juvenile justice system has just reached a breaking point. First, I've encouraged you guys, speaking about costs and everything that's bogging people down in the state of Washington, I've encouraged you to take the First Mark Challenge. You all need insurance, right? Are you dealing with your insurance on your own, or do you have a local trusted insurance broker to help you? If you don't have a broker, I highly recommend taking the First Mark Challenge. It's free, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. What they're going to do is go over your current insurance, talk a little bit with you about your insurance needs. They're going to go out, they're going to shop all the carriers that they have at their disposal, and then they're going to come back to you with a proposal. I get so many messages from you guys who've taken the First Mark Challenge and are now members of the First Mark family. Casey in Covington says, thank you for telling us to check out First Mark. I did the challenge after receiving a ridiculous renewal statement for my insurance. We made the switch to policies with First Mark and walked away with slightly better homeowners insurance for the same price, and they managed to save us 37% off our auto quote for the same coverage. Right now, every dollar counts. So I think that seems to be the nexus for a lot of people taking the challenge, is they get some sort of renewal statement, home or auto, and it's absurd. And they're like, okay, now I'm going to do what Brandy said all along. I'm going to take the First Mark Challenge. And then they end up just regretting that they didn't do it sooner. So take the First Mark Challenge today, firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you. Okay, this is a devastating story. Unfortunately, it's a story that we hear all too often. What do you think the news cycle would be like in the state of Washington if a young white man with an assault rifle walked into a mall and killed an innocent 13-year-old? Wall to wall, probably. I imagine that Jay Inslee would have been out, Bob Ferguson would have been out, that they would have had press conferences, that they would have talked about the need for gun control, et cetera, et cetera. But when it's a young black man with a pistol who is likely involved in some sort of gang activity, then it's whispers, because that doesn't make the headlines for them. That's not the kind of thing that can lead them to get some big dramatic headline about the latest and greatest gun control law they put into place, these big bad guns and weapons of war that they want to ban, fine, but then they don't acknowledge that they are responsible for such a small fraction of the homicides committed with firearms in the state of Washington and really across the country. And so things like this aren't as politically palatable, or as they can't twist it, I guess, for their political gain. And that's what this is, right? All of these homicides, anything that happens with a gun, it's a tool for them to make a political point and to pass through gun control. So all that aside, just for a moment, to take the politics out of it, because it really is quite devastating. A 13-year-old named Jada Woods Johnson at Alderwood Mall, this is Wednesday evening. And man, I mean, who among us can't think about times we went to the mall when we were 13 with our friends? And I think we lose sight of that, right? Because we do turn it into this kind of political thing. And yes, this is a political show, and I'm going to talk about some of the political implications and the laws, et cetera. But I think that we need to take a moment to recognize that a beautiful young 13-year-old girl who was doing what every 13-year-old girl in the country does from time to time on a day off in the summer, lost her life for no reason. For no reason at all. Completely innocent. Never should happen in the United States of America for any reason. I am devastated for her family. I just can't even imagine what her parents and her loved ones are going through. So period, bottom line, absolutely heartbreaking to hear this. So the mall was placed on lockdown briefly. Police were searching for the shooter. They had put out some surveillance images in the news looking for the shooter. Later that evening, the mother of a 16-year-old boy ended up seeing those images, turned the suspect into police, which I think is very good. So kudos to that mother, was booked into Snohomish County Juvenile Court. Now, here is where things get really frustrating. It's already, again, sad and tragic. That 16-year-old boy was out of jail before you know it. Posted, had a $500,000 bail, was able to post bond, because remember, you're talking about just a percentage of that. And then, you know, anybody who owns a home in Washington has $500 in assets that they can put up to get someone out. So here you are, just put yourself in the position of this family. You have lost your beautiful 13-year-old girl in the most tragic way possible. And then as you are still, I imagine, weeping and grieving that night, before you know it, the 16-year-old is home safe with his family. Home safe with his family, not in jail. Shot. And so there was apparently a disagreement between groups, gunfire, and it hit this 13-year-old girl, Jada. She had nothing to do with it at all. So completely innocent. So it sounds like some sort of, I'm just gonna say, it sounds like a gang dispute. Who else just opens fire, gets in a disagreement at a mall, and then opens fire at a mall? That's ridiculous. So $500,000 bail for someone who committed a mall shooting. What do you think the bail would have been? Again, I'm going to bring race into it. I don't care. I'm going to bring the type of gun into it. What do you think the bail would have been if it had been a 16-year-old white boy with a semi-automatic rifle who opened fire at a mall and shot this girl? Do you even think they would have gotten bail? I tend to believe it would have been higher than $500,000. Now, look, I am a constitutionalist. We have a constitutional right in this country to bail. We have a constitutional right of innocence until proven guilty. And so we don't want to ever live. I don't ever want to live in a society where police and the government can lock you up and throw away the key before you have your day in court. That's not where we want to be either. But $500,000 when you shot and killed an innocent 13-year-old at a mall, allegedly, that's ridiculous. I mean, it should be $2 million at the very least. That's a very common bail for someone who commits murder, $2 million. I don't care if you are 16 years old, and I don't care if your mom did turn you in. When you're facing potentially life in prison being charged as an adult, which we would hope that that's what happens in this case, then, yeah, you have a lot of motivation to not return to court. And that's the bottom line. And also, judges have to consider the seriousness of the crime. Can you get any more serious than opening fire in a public place, in a mall, on a hot week, on a Wednesday, when a lot of people are going to be going to the mall to cool down, busy week, holiday week? Can you think of a more serious crime? $500,000 bail? Give me a freaking break. And the family was just absolutely livid. Jada's mom, Tabitha, said, "This is completely unreasonable and an example of why this continues to occur too often in our country. Our justice system isn't taking a strong enough stand against those who are committing these senseless acts of violence." We say that over and over. That you can do gun control, and you can, you know, scream that from the mountaintops. But when you're presented with a case of someone who actually uses a gun, a 16-year-old who wasn't legally allowed to have that gun, so obviously there's already an issue there. They're not following gun laws. You're not following gun laws if you're a 16-year-old walking around with a handgun at a mall, right? So gun control doesn't do any good in that situation. So when you have a hard and fast example of someone who uses a gun to do the most horrible thing you can do with a gun, take an innocent life, And then you have a justice system that says, ah, let them go home to their mommy and daddy. That's when I don't take the gun control thing seriously. It's like, I'm not even going to listen to what you have to say about gun control unless you are throwing the book at gun offenders. And you're not doing that, obviously. So you have this horrible situation, and it highlights a couple things. Obviously, the absurdity of this whole gun control debate, the breakdown in our criminal justice system, but also what we continue to see is the very serious nature of juvenile crime in this state and across this country. And at a time where you have these horrible crimes being committed by people so young, we have a juvenile justice system that is at a breaking point. This segment is brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. So just as this is happening, the Department of Children, Youth, and Families sends out the director of the Department of Children, Youth, and Families, Ross Hunter. He sends out this letter to a lot of people, but involved parties, and basically says, we can't book into juvenile detention facilities anymore. We can't do it. They're at capacity, they're over capacity, and it's creating all these issues in our juvenile detention facilities. The letter is very short, so I'm just going to read it to you in full. Effective July 5th, 2024, DCYF is suspending the intake of youth and young adults into juvenile rehabilitation facilities. This decision is necessary due to a spike in population at Green Hill School, leading to a deteriorating and dangerous situation as staff struggle to manage 240 youth and young people on campus. The duration of this suspension is indeterminate. During this suspension, any existing contract provisions related to the acceptance of new intakes will be placed on hold. Other agreement provisions, blah, 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 will do formal notifications and further details next week. We appreciate you understanding, blah. So it gives virtually no information, just says at our two juvenile detention facilities, there are only two in the state, that we are not going to be accepting as of July 5th any new intake. So that's scary. Obviously, there are some questions about, okay, what happens? Because obviously you have juvenile offenders committing crimes. They're going to face sentencing. And then what happens to them? Are you just going to let them out? Like, what are you going to do? So here's from the Seattle Times, a little more information on this. Youth sentenced to juvenile rehabilitation will remain in county facilities instead of being transferred to Echo Glen or Green Hill. So Echo Glen is like in the Snoqualmie area and Green Hill is down in Centralia. The suspensions do not include a plan to release any, this suspension doesn't include a plan to release anyone incarcerated at Echo Glen or Green Hill. At least there's that they're not saying, hey, they've got no rooms, we're just going to release them. So for now, that's not included in this. The department said Green Hill has filled up faster than expected, citing an increase in young people being sentenced and for longer periods. This is insane to me. Let me read that sentence again. The department said Green Hill has filled up faster than expected, citing an increase in young people being sentenced and for longer periods. You know another way to say that? An increase in juvenile crime. It's not just that they're being sentenced to longer periods of incarceration or rehabilitation. It's because more young people are committing crimes so serious that they have to go to Echo Glen or Green Hill and be held there for a longer period of time. And also remember what the issue is here, because they said at Green Hill, the average stay is 272 days compared with 189 at Echo Glen, and that they're way over capacity, right? Remember, under the Inslee administration, the individuals who can be, I call it incarcerated still, although it's like they call it a school. It's still a juvie center, although we all know that there have been issues there, which I'll get to momentarily. Now it's up to the age of 25. There's no reason that offenders up to the age of 25 should be in a juvenile detention facility. And that's part of the problem here. You should be there until you're 18 years old. I said on the show, I think the proposal I gave was, okay, if their sentence is going to conclude before their 21st birthday, let them serve the entirety of that sentence at Green Hill or Echo Glen. But if their sentence is going to go beyond their 21st birthday, then at their 18th birthday, they should be moved into a prison setting and facility. That's what I've said. I think that makes a lot of sense. But apparently we've got to treat 25-year-old murderers like they're kids still and keep them out of school. That makes no sense. So this is going on, but here's the thing. Who does this surprise? Should this be a surprise to anyone? Absolutely not. Should this be a surprise to DCYF? Absolutely not. Why? Because we have known for years, really, that there were deteriorating conditions when it came to a safety perspective at both Echo Glen and Green Hill. At Echo Glen, numerous stories about violent escapes of juvenile offenders, some of them murderers. That happens not infrequently. And then at Echo Glen, what were we all talking about at the end of last year? We were talking about a report from the King 5 investigators that Centralia Police, and we just pulled some of this back up. Centralia Police, remember, they sent a letter to Governor Jay Inslee begging Jay Inslee and Attorney General Bob Ferguson to investigate what was happening at Green Hill School in Chehalis. Sorry, not Centralia. Chehalis. Begged them in this long letter, detailed all the issues that were happening, detailed, in some instances, staff at Green Hill School who are participating and helping facilitate illegal activity. They begged the governor and the Attorney General Bob Ferguson for help. Do you remember what Jay Inslee said? Jay Inslee sent a letter back and basically said, things are fine. Don't worry about it. We have it taken care of. We've received your letter, but like no big deal. Said the governor's office is declining to refer this matter to the Attorney General's office for further investigation. We thank you for your care and concern for the young people being served at Green Hill School. Governor Inslee gave him a big middle finger when they were raising serious concerns. You remember what else the state did? The state, Governor Jay Inslee, forced police to investigate. They were trying to investigate crimes at Green Hill that they had ample evidence of. They forced them to get a search warrant to search a state-run juvenile detention facility for evidence of criminal activity. Insane. I mentioned the King 5 investigators story. They talked to Inslee about this again. It was the end of last year. And again, Inslee just completely dismissed the very real concerns about the state of our juvenile detention facilities.
They felt like they were brushed off.
Well, I can assure you that we have made improvements there, in part because some of these concerns have been raised.
That is not the case. Nothing has been corrected, and which is incredibly frustrating.
Yeah, so you have Inslee. No, all good, all good. Attorney General's office doesn't need to look into it. We have made changes. And then you've got the police chief being like, that's not true. Nothing has been done. And so now you fast forward, 6 months? And DCYF says things are so bad, we can't even take any new juvenile offenders. This is a pattern in the state of Washington, where you have a crisis that gets so bad and so bad and so bad and so bad, then it's at a critical point where you can't ignore it, you can't deny it, you can't hide it anymore. And then it's too far gone to be fixed. Look, I mean, you can apply that to any of the crises that we have, the crime crisis, the homelessness crisis, the drug crisis, et cetera. And everywhere in there, in every one of those crises, there's a Governor Jay Inslee standing there saying it's not a problem. Denying the problem, blaming something else, like the homeless crisis, he blames housing, wants $4 billion to fix it. So here you have, just months ago, the governor saying, no big deal, Attorney General Bob Ferguson does not need to investigate this, and now here we are, the middle of the summer, during a juvenile crime crisis, with DCYF saying, we will not accept any more bookings of juvenile offenders. Ladies and gentlemen, the state of Washington. Absolutely insane. Not only insane, but dangerous. And I think back again to the 13-year-old girl whose life was taken while she was at the mall with her friends. And I think forward to what's going to happen to the 16-year-old who took her life. And maybe we get to a place where it's so bad that they say, we're not going to try him as an adult. We're just going to give him a slap on the wrist and set him on his way because we really don't have a place to put him. I know that sounds crazy, but given everything that's happened with our juvenile justice system, I do not think that's out of the realm of possibility. That segment was brought to you in partnership with our friends over at Future 42. Turn your frustration into action at future42.org. If you are in the market to sell your home, I know the market has just been all over the place lately, but Wes Jones and his team at Wes Jones & Associates, they've been doing this for a long time. They have weathered a lot of market ups and downs, and they've been able to produce results for their clients. Bryce and Carla, who are fans of Undivided, they sold their home in Bellevue to retire in Florida. They ended up reaching out to Wes Jones and his team, very happy with the results.
He was extraordinarily detailed, and he knew our neighborhood and our properties in the neighborhood very well. He gave us a really great comp plan, showed us what other properties were selling for, and most importantly, he helped us to understand the dangers of overpricing. And we thought what we knew we could get for the property, but we didn't, you know, at the same time, he breathed an air of reality into us, said, look, guys, you want to get that out of the property, you're going to need to start at a certain point. And you're going to let the market come to you. And that's exactly what happened. He was exactly right about that. So his knowledge of the market and his professionalism and his attention to detail is all that made the difference to us.
Yeah, so they followed Wes's advice, sold their home in 7 days for over list price, or 7 days over list price, and now they are enjoying retirement in the sun. So can't ask for much more than that. Wes Jones and Associates, sellwithwes.com. Sellwithwes.com. Start by using their home value calculator to see how much your home is worth. Might be worth more than you think. Sellwithwes.com, a better way to sell your home. All right, because of an exclusive story that we broke here on the Undivided podcast, State Senator Maka Dingra, who is in the race to become Attorney General, has taken what could have been a two-day scandal, maybe, and turned it into a potential campaign ender. Let's get to it in our segment, Unbelievable. Boop. All right. So let's catch up maybe non-undivided obsessed people with a story that we broke on the show 2 weeks ago, I think. Yeah. So we had gotten a tip, actually going back a couple months, from someone who said, hey, Brandy, Maka Dingra keeps saying she's a prosecutor with King County. She's not. She hasn't worked there in years. And I thought, no way. Why would you lie about that? It's so easy to disprove. And, you know, then she's out on the campaign trail for Attorney General. And make no mistake, she is saying that she is, well, here's the video voter guide.
Hi, I am Maka Dingra, Deputy Majority Leader of the Washington State Senate, Senior Deputy Prosecuting Attorney with King County, and I'm running to be your next Attorney General.
Senior Deputy Prosecuting Attorney with King County, and I am running to be your next Attorney General. I mean, that's what she calls herself. It was on all of her social media pages, on her official bio for her campaign website. It was all there. So anyway, then we asked the King County Prosecutor's Office, hey, is she work there? And they said, no, she hasn't worked here in any full-time capacity since 2017. If you're doing the math, carry the two, that's 7 years. And then she had come back for a couple months in 2019, and then during the pandemic in 2021 to, as they described it, help with some computer systems that she was more familiar with during the pandemic when they were just completely overburdened. She worked there for just like a couple months. And then in October of 2021, she sent them an email saying, hey, it's my last day. Thank you for letting me come back and, you know, help with these computers, whatever, during the pandemic. So we did a story after reaching out to Maka Dingra's campaign repeatedly asking, we asked, is there any explanation for this that you can provide us? They didn't respond. They were just hoping that, oh, crazy Brandy will do the story and, you know, no Democrats will hear what she has to say. Well, they did. And one of the first things that happened is the King County Prosecutor's Office, and these are emails that we've shared with you before, the HR department told her, like, hey, we heard from a reporter that you're calling yourself a senior deputy prosecuting attorney. Can you stop doing that, essentially? Like, can you not do that anymore? Can you correct your campaign material? And Maka had responded and said, oh, Lisa Mannion, the current prosecutor, told me I was on a leave of absence and that she considers me a current employee, to which HR responded, hi, Maka, I spoke to Lisa and she does not recall having that conversation. Thanks, Heidi. So that was sort of where we had left it. We'd done a couple follow-ups on this already that, you know, Maka Dingra, it's been more than 2 weeks, and she hadn't corrected her campaign material, even though the HR department is saying, you don't work here. Stop saying you work here. So then, took them 2 weeks, but Kobo News picks up the story, and Chris Daniels, they didn't give us credit for the story, but I'd rather have them do the story, because it's so important, than not do the story, so forgiven. So Chris Daniels actually gets Maka Dingra on the record. And I'm thinking, great, like she's going to be held accountable for this. It's an audience that, you know, is different than our audience. So maybe this is some pressure for her. So she tells Chris Daniels this, none of my campaign materials say that I'm currently employed there. I simply use the title that former prosecutor Dan Satterberg has given me, which I still have. I got to take this piece by piece. Ma'am, this isn't the Game of Thrones. It's not like, you know, when the Dragon Queen says, oh, you're the Lord of Storm's End, because that's what I have made you. Nicole's like, I haven't seen it. It's not, you're not like getting a title from a queen or a king. You were a senior deputy prosecuting attorney. You don't get to call yourself that until you die. That's not how that works. That's like me calling myself today a reporter with Fox 13, because that is a job title I once held. Dan Satterberg isn't even the prosecutor anymore. What are you saying? I simply use that title that Dan Satterberg has given to me. Like, you're not, I don't understand. It boggles the mind. Then she says, nowhere in my campaign materials do I say that I'm currently employed at the office. I am always very clear that I am on a leave of absence, and I have consistently said that. Nicole, can you just to refresh my memory, play the video voter guide intro for me again? One more time.
Hi, I am Monica Dhingra, Deputy Majority Leader of the Washington State Senate, Senior Deputy Prosecuting Attorney with King County, and I'm running to be your next Attorney General.
That doesn't sound like you're being clear that you don't work there anymore or that you're on a leave of absence. So then she goes on in this Como article to say, when asked why she wouldn't just amend the campaign or official sites, she said, quote, we can do that. I cannot change it on the official site because of campaign rules, but I can put leave of absence. I'm sure we can amend that to say I'm currently on a leave of absence, but I have been a senior deputy prosecuting attorney with King County since 2000. Okay. So then she does that. After this Como news story, this is about to get real wild, people. After this Como news story, she goes and she updates all of her bios to say most of them. We found a couple that she hadn't yet, but that's okay. She did most of them. King County, senior deputy prosecuting attorney, parentheses, on a leave of absence. Oliver's currently on a leave of absence. So she thinks somehow that this is done now. Now, let me tell you, before I get to the real piece de resistance, what should have happened here. For anyone who's not unhinged and who cares about, like, even being considered to be remotely honest, I think there was a short window of time for Monica Dhingra to say, I thought I was on a leave of absence and could kind of come back if I wanted, like I had done before, and obviously I was mistaken, so I'll change my material. Like, really sorry about that. How long would that story have lasted? One cycle? I don't think we ever would have done a follow-up on it. Certainly Como News probably wouldn't have done a story 2 weeks later. I think that there was wiggle room for her to argue, since she had come back in a limited capacity twice since 2017, that she believed she was sort of welcome back at any time and that she was on a leave of absence. But now what she has done is taken that wiggle room and I believe tanked her campaign completely, which I find genuinely hilarious. Because now she is outright lying and there's no way around it. Because she's saying I'm on a leave of absence, despite, remember, she changed that 3 days ago, July 6th, she updated her material 2 days ago. Well, on June 24th, she got this email from the King County Prosecuting Attorney's Office. Monica, by way of further follow-up, our HR and payroll records do not reflect that you have been on a leave at any time since your resignation email dated October 1st, 2021. We understand you may have had a conversation with the former prosecutor, Dan Satterberg, which led you to believe that you were on leave after your resignation. But the current prosecutor, Lisa Mannion, does not recollect being part of such a conversation or having such a conversation with you after she was elected. Please know that our office does not consider you to be on leave. Is there anything ambiguous about that? No. On June 24th, they told Monica Dhingra, we do not consider you to be on a leave of absence. Yet Monica Dhingra somehow thinks that she has fixed things by changing all her campaign material to say she is indeed a current senior King County prosecuting attorney on a leave of absence. Now she's outright lying. Now things have gotten very serious. Now, I think she was lying before, but again, if you wanted to give her every benefit of the doubt, I could see how maybe she really thought she was on a leave of absence. But instead of acknowledge it, instead of fix it, now she has gone into a full-blown lie. That should be enough to be disqualifying for any political candidate, let alone a candidate who wants to be the state's chief law enforcer. I hope more members of the media pick up on this now that it is very clear that she doesn't have any care or concern for being honest with the voters of the state of Washington. All right, let's dip into some national news, shall we? I mean, Biden updates overfloweth. I just want to get to a couple of them. This is a wild story. There is a few questions I've been asked a lot since I left mainstream news. And one of them is, are you told what to say? And then are you told like what questions to ask? People think that that's a common occurrence. That's not a common occurrence. I was never told you have to say this. Now, occasionally, if I was interviewing a politician or a political candidate, you might have their handler say they'd really like to talk about this. They'd really like if you asked about this. doesn't mean I'm going to do it. Like, thanks, but no thanks, you know? That was kind of common. You had PR flackies who didn't really understand how it works. And no good journalist, no journalist worth anything would ever say, yeah, will you provide me with some questions to ask? That's insane. It just doesn't happen. Unless you're in a presidential election year and Biden needs a really good interview. So Biden did a couple interviews with some swing state radio stations. And now two radio hosts have come forward after those interviews and said they were provided questions by the Biden team that they asked. Here's a clip of Word host Andrea Lawful Sanders on CNN.
Were those questions given to you by the White House, or did you have, or the campaign, or did you have to submit questions ahead of this interview?
The questions were sent to me for approval. I approved them.
Okay, so the White House sent the questions to you ahead of the interview.
Yes.
Okay.
I got several questions, eight of them, and the four that were chosen were the ones that I approved.
Okay. And the reason I ask is not a criticism of either of you. It's just that if the White House is trying now to prove the vim, vigor, acuity of the president, I don't know how they do that by sending questions first before the interview so that the president knows what's coming.
That's insane. It's like those hosts didn't know that they were admitting to something really, really bad. They were like, yeah, they sent eight questions. I approved the questions. And then both the hosts said they ended up asking a lot of the questions that the White House provided. And shame on that CNN host for not being harder on them, being like, you don't do that. Why would you ever do that? And I don't know if these radio hosts, I'm sure it's the first time they've ever gotten a big interview and they were hand selected and they were like, we can use them as patsies and they won't know that they're not supposed to. They're getting an interview with the president and they'll just ask what we ask. So here you have Biden who's trying to prove that he's capable of doing the job. Well, yeah, anyone can prove that they or sound capable if they know the questions that they're going to be asked. That's insane. It's not a surprise that the Biden administration would provide questions. That's politicians doing what politicians do. It's utterly shocking that not one host, but two would not only ask the questions, but then gleefully admit that they asked the questions and approved the question. Why are you approving the questions that you're supposed to ask? And now that at least the woman's been fired, the one who you just heard from there, which is a no-brainer. I'm baffled by this. And it's going to make people believe that this happens all the time. It really does not happen all the time. I mean, I can't speak for every news entity in the country, but this idea that people are given questions ahead of time, it just doesn't happen. It just doesn't happen like that. Now, you might give them softball questions that they absolutely know are coming, but to gain a, what's the point? I don't. Well,
and the only reason that they were caught was because they were both given the same eight questions and they both chose the same four questions to ask. So everybody was like, wait a minute, you're asking the same four questions in both interviews. Why are you asking the same four questions? So that's the only reason they were even caught, was because they picked the same four. If they would have picked different four, who knows if they would have been.
So very possible that the Biden administration has done this with other, you know, they find a local radio person like, hey, you want to do an interview with the president? They're like, oh my God, yes. Yeah. And then they're not going to push back. I'm sure it's happened before, but it's truly insane. I mean, I do want you to know that that is the exception. I really don't believe that that is ever standard practice. And even in a network news station that you might not think highly of, like MSNBC or CNN or something, I think that if it were to come to light that a reporter had been given questions to ask, that they would be fired instantly. I have little doubt of that. Okay, so there are an increasing number of congressional Democrats who are asking Biden to step aside, including Congressman Adam Smith of Washington, which I've always liked Adam Smith. He's a straight shooter, and so I certainly appreciate that of him. This from NBC. Four more Democrats in Congress call for Biden to step aside in the 2024 race. The House Democrats who said Biden should drop out of the race were Adam Smith of Washington, Jerry Nadler of New York. That's a big deal. Mark Takano of California and Joe Morelli of New York. All four lawmakers hold top positions on key committees and bring the number of Democrats in Congress who have called for Biden to reconsider his bid for president to nearly a dozen. And one of the things I want to say about that is pay very close attention to how Democrats are articulating their reasons for wanting Biden to stay or go. If you see Democrats who are focusing on his ability to win versus his ability to live and his health, that shows you that they don't really care about him. They just care about beating Trump. It's not, they have no care or concern for his health. Because I look at this from like a position of, this is really sad and devastating for this older gentleman. That you're putting him through something that I don't know if he can survive, the stress of a presidential campaign. So if their focus squarely on, oh, well, he should stay in because he's the only one with the proven ability to beat Donald Trump, that Democrat is so morally bankrupt, they genuinely do not care about his health and well-being. And I think that's a horrible, horrible thing. When that's what the conversation focuses on, when you have someone who's clearly deteriorating physically, mentally before our eyes. So Biden or his handlers, probably his handlers, sent a 2-page letter to members of Congress as they came back from the 4th of July break. We're not going to read the full 2 pages to you, but Joe Biden's the Joe Biden account on Twitter, I mean, he's not writing any of this, says, "This morning I sent a letter to my fellow Democrats on Capitol Hill. In it, I shared my thoughts about this moment in our campaign. It's time to come together, move forward as a unified party, and defeat Donald Trump." So basically the gist of the letter is he says he's not dropping out and he wants Democrats to stop suggesting that he should drop out, get it together, same page, and move forward to November. So I think that makes it even more significant that you do have some Democrats who are like, "No, Joe, you can't run, like step aside." So we have reached out to Congressman Smith's office to see if he'll come on. Have they given us an answer or not?
Not yet.
I don't know if this is something he's going to want to talk about, but he's been on the show many times before. So yes. I'd love to have this conversation and also to hear whether he's gotten any pushback from inside the Democratic ranks about asking for that. Okay, we're going to get to our daily subscriber show poll questions and comments coming up next. First, Zach Abraham coming up on July 25th. He's going to have another one of his free Know Your Risk webinars on inflation. They've done three of these on, this will be the third on inflation because it's been so popular. You know, you're looking at your retirement portfolio and the retirement you've envisioned, but with this inflationary environment, can you afford the retirement that you've envisioned? So Zach and his team call inflation the silent portfolio killer. That's why they're having so many of these seminars to help you manage it. It's happening July 25th, 3:30 p.m. Pacific time, totally free. You can sign up at knowyourriskradio.com, knowyourriskradio.com. They're also going to talk about some other things that can, you know, provide risk to your retirement. The election that's looming, global unrest, rising cost of living, market volatility. So protecting retirement portfolios never been more critical, and it is Bulwark's number one priority. So sign up for their free webinar, knowyourriskradio.com. When you go there, a little thing will pop up and you can just sign up. So they make it super easy. Knowyourriskradio.com. Investment advisory services offered through Trek Financial LLC, an SEC registered investment advisor. Investments involve risk and are not guaranteed. Past performance doesn't guarantee future results. Trek 24244. Go to knowyourriskradio.com. Okay, before we get to questions and comments, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll. I asked you guys about the Seattle Times editorial board endorsing Bob Ferguson. Do you believe that the endorsement is important? So I put out that poll across Patreon, locals, and to our subscribers on X. Let's check on Patreon first. 63% saying, no, we don't believe it's important. Diana says the Seattle Times is in a rarefied bubble, so I think many people around the state don't put much stock in its opinion any longer. Kathleen Brosey says, once upon a time, I naively voted along with the Seattle Times endorsements. Many people still do. Big Mike, I think it's important because most people won't see the endorsement. I think this becomes relevant when potential moderates that aren't political junkies headline grab and take it as a fact. It also gives Ferguson something to brag about and try to make a bigger deal about it than it is. And I agree with that too. It's just like, maybe you think it doesn't help him, but it certainly doesn't hurt him, right? Certainly doesn't hurt him to get the Seattle Times endorsement. Over on locals right now on Twitter, 100% of people are saying, no, it doesn't help. On locals, very similar to Patreon, 70% saying no. Let's see. Courtney says, I hate that their endorsement holds so much weight. Sadly, people won't educate themselves. They'll simply vote for Ferguson because of this. This is so sad for our state. Tammy T, no one reads their shit anyway. Write whatever you want. No one from my tribe listens to them for anything. Todd Welch, Brandy, they endorse almost every Democrat, so to me it means nothing. I'm unsure how other voters feel about it. How many people actually read their endorsements? Has anyone actually studied these endorsements? That's why I say they could have safely endorsed Mark Mullett without a meltdown from the left, right? Like, so there was another Democrat in the race that would be a perfectly reasonable option, yet they went with Bob Ferguson. And to me, again, I don't think it's the end-all be-all. I think it's important because you're talking about every vote counting in November, but I don't think it's the end-all be-all. What bothers me is the fact that they're speaking out of both sides of their mouth. They're saying all these things that are happening with the state and how bad it is, and then they're endorsing someone who will not only continue us down that path, but do it at a speed that we won't be able to recover from. It'll happen so quickly, there'll be no way back. Bob Ferguson isn't suddenly going to change the politician that he's been just because he's governor. He's not going to do it. So that boggles the mind. Here you're supposed to have like some like what do you call it, like smart studied minds who are on the ed board. I mean, these are people who have been around Seattle politics for a long time. And you see this video of them sitting around the table and, you know, conversing with these gubernatorial candidates as part of their ed board thing. And I'm thinking, like, that's the brain trust came to this conclusion. I'm not calling them stupid at all. I don't think they're stupid. I think they're smart. And that's why this, if it had been a stranger, that's a totally different thing. I think they're smart. I think they have shown an understanding of the challenges facing the state of Washington. Like, they sat around the table with him and they decided, this is our guy. That makes no sense to me. That it puts conspiracies in my mind. It's that stupid. It makes me think, like, all these things, like, oh, is it because of the tax breaks or whatever it is? Which, I don't know. It's just insane. All right, questions and comments. Sergeant Pickles, we need ranked choice voting. It would mostly eliminate the Byrd Reichert split vote issue because it would give Bob the win by default, which would give Bob the win by default. Rick Johnson, the Seattle Times cannot even sniff or spell objective journalism. I have more faith in the National Enquirer. And to be fair, the Ed Board isn't supposed to do objective journalism. They're supposed to give their opinion. It's just a really bad opinion. It's just an opinion that doesn't make any sense. Diana Manning with a $10 super chat. Keep on swearing. I didn't swear.
Oh my gosh, you swore a few times.
No, I did not.
What?
Wow, I blacked out, I think.
Wow.
One, it's really hot in here. Two,
it is really hot.
I blacked out. I can't run my fan while we're on the show. I'm sweating up a storm over here. I think I blacked out a little bit. And then did I say I was going to vote for Donald Trump?
Are you going to try to take that back now?
Was that a dream? Can't wait till that's clipped on the internet.
We're a fun bunch today.
Don't even care. I'll have to go back. I'm sorry, babe, to Mike. I don't mean to swear. Sometimes I just get so riled up. Matt Gilbert, this mood swing is wild. Go off, queen. Not a mood swing. Are you calling it a mood swing because I'm a woman and I have hormones? Is that why, Matt? That's really sexist. But thank you for the super chat. STI Builder, $50 super chat. Do we have a new sugar mama or daddy?
Yeah, that was the first super
chat.
Wow,
nice. $50. Sweet. Old Sub Sailor, my mom gave me $50 for my birthday. Isn't that cute? I told Nicole my mom was here last week on my birthday. Mm-hmm. She gave me a card with $50 in it. Isn't that cute? It's like, Mom, I don't need money anymore. But, you know, she'd send me, like, Valentine's Day cards with, like, $10. I'm like, that's adorable. I love that. I'm always going
to
be okay with that.
It's so cute. She wants to buy you something.
I think it's cute. Old yeah. Sub Sailor, $10 super chat. It's only Monday, Brandy. It's going to be a fun week. I appreciate your passion. Thank you. Boo Boo Bear, $10 for the FCC fines. That's the best part about not being on TV anymore.
No fines.
F the FCC. On the Times, David, why is a newspaper endorsing anybody? Newspapers should remain neutral in elections because it's the editorial board and that's what they do. Jeff McLeod, a prime example of Inslee and Ferguson's failure is in the recent disclosure of the closure of the two youth detention centers for intake without explanation. How can this be happening if they're concerned about youth crime? 100%. 100%. And again, they were explicitly asked, both Bob Ferguson and Jay Inslee, explicitly asked to investigate what was happening. Attorney General Bob Ferguson could have done it on his own. He didn't have to get approval from Jay Inslee. He could have said, I'm the attorney general. We're looking into what's happening there. I'm an independently elected official. I'm the state's chief law enforcer, and this is in my purview. He chose not to. Well, let's endorse him for governor anyway. That'll go over well. I'm sure he'll get right on the youth crime crisis. So dumb. Let me see. Julie B., you can like a person and not like their behavior, a.k.a. politics. Our family has firsthand experience with the drug crisis. Please, please do not decriminalize hard drugs. An arrest may be the wake-up call for those addicted to drugs and give the addict a chance to turn their life around. And I think for any person watching who has a personal connection to the drug crisis, I think you should send the Seattle Times. They have a little thing where they allow feedback to the editor, and I think you should tell them how dangerous you think it is to endorse a candidate for governor who has said he wants to decriminalize hard drugs in the middle of an overdose crisis. Maybe they'll listen to you. On Monka Dingra, Mo Bias. Oh, Mo Bias. I like that. Get it? Not less bias, Mo Bias. Mo Bias. Good on you, Brandy. Como had been hustling lately. Would love to see you work with them. No, I escaped that death trap of mainstream news, not going back. They should have given us credit, though. I'm a little salty about it. I'm not precious with exclusives. I think the word exclusive is way overused, but when you bird dog something and it would not exist without your investigatory work and tips and sources, you got to give credit for that. We do.
Stupid. We do all the
that
time.
That bothers me. Slow no mo. When you find yourself in a hole, stop digging. Yeah, old Monka Dinker genuinely made it worse. Genuinely made it worse. And it's actually shocking that more media outlets haven't covered it. You're talking about one of the leading attorney general candidates, just blatantly lying. And the emails that prove it. Like, if any media wants to cover it, I will give you the emails. You don't even have to credit us. You don't even have to credit us. I will give you the emails. Just cover it. Because all we care about at the end of the day is voters being informed about what's happening. Like, I can be salty about not getting credit, but I care more about voters getting the information they need.
Yeah. And there's a, lying is one thing, but there, but the way that she has told, no, you're not on leave, and then writes on leave. So you're defying the prosecutor's office now. It's really wild.
It's so bold to say, I know better than the HR department whether I'm still employed.
Oh, and the current prosecuting.
But again, it's like, just because the old prosecutor came out and, what did he W with a sword and you got it down on one knee. He's like, I W from this day until your last day, a senior deputy prosecuting attorney.
I'm very disappointed in me not knowing Game of Thrones.
Nicole really needs to get on the GOT references. But it's like, that's not how it works. You're not that until you die. It does. That doesn't make any sense.
No. Former. Silly. I mean, you can be former. Exactly. Right, former. You can keep the title, but former.
And also, it sounds better if you say former, because when you say on leave of absence, it sounds like you did something wrong. You know what I mean? For a layperson?
Yeah, maybe leave of absence, like you did something wrong, or leave of absence, because I'm not sure that this attorney general thing is going to work out for me, so I might want to go back. So you're not very confident in your own ability to win the race, I guess.
Yeah, it's super, super strange. What else am I going to talk about? I think that's it. Okay.
Oh my gosh, it's so hot.
Yeah, I need to get done because I need the fan back on. Okay. I'm like cooking. And by, I mean, I love you guys, but also, you know, we got a good sanity check to get to. So those would be your questions. Thank you. What?
I got to go blow my nose too.
Soon. Nicole's all stuffed up. I'm surprised this heat isn't just.
Oh my gosh, it is.
Helping you out.
Maybe. I don't know. I spent the whole holiday in bed. Yeah. Sick. It was terrible.
But you feel better. You're just congested.
Yes. I feel much better than I did Wednesday, Thursday, Friday.
Yeah.
Bummer. Anyway,
at least you have AC at your house.
Did you have fun though? How are the dogs?
Oh my god, I had the best weekend. Sorry. Okay.
No, I'm glad.
I had a really good weekend. I got virtually nothing done. I was here a little bit on Sunday because Daryl was in. We were going over some stuff, and so I did that. But no, I went to the lake with our friends Todd and Amy, and that was really fun. Had a good time. Lucky is literally an Olympic champion diver. She has been, now this is second time at the lake with a dock, and she was jumping off the dock before I even threw the ball. She was like, whew. Like a little, I mean, honestly, Michael Phelps.
That's awesome.
Michael Phelps. So we, I had a good time, went to the river, did things, sat home in the AC a lot and all of that. So
all right.
We only have the AC in one room.
No fireworks because the dogs don't like them, right?
Oh my gosh. Well, that was the only thing. The dogs Mackenzie melts down over fireworks. It's actually really, really sad. It's horrible to watch. I have scratches all over my arms and legs from her because she wants to be on you.
Poor baby.
She's like freaked out about it. So anyway, fireworks. Look, I love America. Yay. I'll deal with the fireworks. It's just miserable for the dog. Okay. All right. Those have been your wonderful, insightful comments for today. With that, let's get to our closing sanity check, shall we? A beleaguered President Biden is trying to prove to the world that he is capable of running, winning, and serving a second term. Let's check in on how that's going, shall we?
The American public is not going to move away from me as the average voter. And again, I'm here for two reasons, pal. One, to rebuild the economy for hardworking middle-class people, give everybody a shot. Just a straight shot. Everybody gets a fair chance, number one. Number two, remember all this talk about how I don't have the black support? Come on, give me a break. Come with me. Watch. I'm getting so frustrated by the elites. Now, I'm not talking about you guys, but about the elites in the party who they know so much more. But if any of these guys don't think I should run against me, go ahead, announce the president. Challenge me at the convention.
Here's just a thought. You know, I'm not a campaign strategist, but I think that if you're trying to convince the American public that Joe Biden is capable of running, having him talk more is not the way to do it. That has been your sanity check for today. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Man, Earth hasn't come to an end yet. I said I was going to vote for Donald Trump, and the Earth is still churning. I think we're going to be back on the air tomorrow. I think it'll be fine. I appreciate every single one of you, your commitment to giving common sense come back, your passion for the state of Washington, and I just love the hell out of you. That's it. Be back here on the live show tomorrow at noon. If you have not signed up to support the show, you can do that at undividedpod.com. Undividedpod.com, and Nicole is telling me she has something to add.
Well, late super chat from Denise. $5 for a couple bags of ice.
Thank you. I'm going to put them down my pants. I mean, that actually would feel really good. Or up my shirt.
It really
would. One of the two. So we'll do that. Okay. Bye. We'll see you tomorrow.